plot counter-deception. Be frustrate, all ye stratagems of hell, and devilish machinations come to naught. Milton, Paradise Regained. Best principles and considerations in matters of deceit. 1. Those who expect to be cheated can be. 2. Those who do not expect to be cheated will be. 3. Those who cannot be cheated are not worth cheating. 4. There is no free lunch. 5. A word to the wise is seldom sufficient. 6. It is not who wins or loses, but the name of the game that matters. 7. Truth is the best lie. 8. There never has been a free lunch. Cheating and Deception. J. Bell, Barton Whaley. I'm your host, Gregory Carpenter, and you're listening to Reverse Deception Radio here on the Veritas Radio Network Crusade channel. Welcome to Reverse Deception Radio. This starts off a very special broadcast. This is going to be part one of a two-part series on something that's left the American people's mind a long time ago, but still remains near and dear to my heart. It's regarding TWA Flight 800 that blew up in the air off the southern coast of Long Island on July 17, 1996. There's a lot of speculation, a lot of questions, many inquiries, a lot of inconsistent responses, and overall confusion. So we're going to go back and we're going to start from the beginning, and we're going to talk about this in a very logical manner. We are going to talk about data. We are going to talk about the specifics of data. You don't have to be a radar expert in order to understand what we're going to talk about on the show, but we will talk about radar data, and you will understand what's included and what's not included, and you'll understand why it's significant and what else you need to make the data more accurate. Having said that, let's go back to that fateful day, July 17, 1996, Ted Koppel, ABC News.
At about 8:40 this evening, Eastern Time, TWA Flight 800, a 747 jumbo jet bound from John F. Kennedy Airport in New York for Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, exploded in midair over the waters off Long Island. There were 249 passengers on board and a crew of 32, 281 people altogether. And the Coast Guard, at this hour at least, is reporting no survivors. A Navy P-3 rescue plane is flying over the crash site and has been dropping life rafts into the water. The Coast Guard has three of its cutters at the crash site and six helicopters flying overhead. Eyewitnesses report seeing explosions in the air. One witness described the scene as a big fireball with pieces coming off it. TWA's Flight 800 had left JFK Airport in New York just minutes before and was reportedly still climbing to altitude when the explosion occurred. The 747 again was bound for Paris. That is what we can report with certainty. The Coast Guard has already recovered a number of bodies. As you can imagine, the Coast Guard is so engaged in the rescue effort that there are no accurate numbers available. But already, the fact that no survivors have been found and that the plane exploded thousands of feet in the air makes the possibility of survivors remote. It is at this point, and we want to be careful about clearly spelling out what is known and what is speculated, it is at this point that we begin to enter the realm of speculation. An FAA source has told ABC News late this evening that there was no distress call from TWA's Flight 800. Under those circumstances, said our source, there are only two things that could have caused the plane to explode in midair. An explosive device, that is, a bomb, or collision with another aircraft. There are, however, no reports yet of another aircraft being involved. In the event that a bomb was involved, the FBI will immediately take over control of the investigation. The rescue operation, of course, is already underway. Coast Guard and Navy vessels and aircraft are at and over the scene. Once again, TWA Flight 800, bound from New York's JFK Airport to Paris, exploded off the coast of Long Island at 8:40 this evening with 281 on board. There are no reports of survivors. The Coast Guard is running the operation from its headquarters in Boston.
Now, there's a couple things that he said straight up that I'd like to point out as rather important, and they're very interesting, as a matter of fact. He mentioned that there was a Navy P-3 Orion already on the scene. All right, time for you military historians to pick up Wikipedia and take a look and see, what does a P-3 Orion do? Well, P-3 Orion is a reconnaissance plane. They've been used for probably 50 years, if memory serves me right. And he said that they were dropping, what? They were dropping life rafts, weren't they? Well, there's no room for life rafts on a P-3 Orion. Thought I'd point that out very quickly. But the other very, very interesting job or function of a P-3 Orion, and I quote, "They were developed during the Cold War. The P-3's primary mission was to track Soviet Navy ballistic missiles and fast attack submarines and to eliminate them in the event of a full-scale war. The main focus of effort of a P-3 was to track Soviet ballistic missile launch." So this is worth a short discussion on different types of missiles for 1 minute. And I promise we'll move right along with this. You have ballistic missiles, you have cruise missiles. Greg, what's the difference? It's rather simple and rather straightforward. A ballistic missile is one that follows a ballistic trajectory. Basically the same concept of how a bullet works. It doesn't go straight through the air, nor does an arrow. They have an arc to them. Well, the ballistic missile has an arc to it also. It gets shot up in the air, and it falls down on the other side. A cruise missile is very different in that a cruise missile is a low-flying missile, and it's guided to the target by an onboard computer or tracking system. So it doesn't raise up high into the air. It travels along at roughly the same altitude across the land or across the oceans and has no defined trajectory to it. The rockets propel it at the same altitude. That's the difference. So as soon as this plane goes down, the Navy happens to have a ballistic missile seeking aircraft up in the air off the coast of Long Island, throwing out rafts and looking for survivors. Now, this is a very interesting situation. The Navy also dispatched 3 cutters into the area in a very quick amount of time. And the unit was sent and managed from the Boston headquarters. Now, as the people were sent from Brooklyn, from Long Island, and Boston, and a couple other places. And that's okay, but it was all run and managed out of Boston, far away from New York City in the first place. Now, if we look at these activities in a vacuum, we might get a myopic response. But when we look at them in conjunction with other events of the day, it springs to life. And for me, there's no way you can accept the government's story on how TWA 800 exploded that night. We're going to move on to day 2, back to Ted Koppel, and get the next broadcast. This one's a little bit longer, but it's important to take in all the information as we go through this so you understand what's happening and what people know when they know it. Right now, on the first day and going into the second day, all that was necessarily known was that the plane blew up, people were searching, and people were very upset. That's all you know. Typical of many tragedies of this nature, day 2 is much more revealing. As some of the pieces get put together in the puzzle, you can see how the picture comes together a little bit better as far as what's happening and what's happened. Now, as we read through these things, this one's going to take about 4.5 minutes, 5 minutes to get through. But as we go through these things, please understand that the information that's being presented is everything that the robust news media was able to gather at the time. And these guys had done a rather good job of investigative reporting and finding out what was happening and what was going on and snooping around, which is rather evident in this next clip. If you've just joined us, this is Greg Carpenter, Reverse Deception Radio, and today we're discussing the strange case of the explosion of TWA Flight 800 over Long Island, July 17th, 1996. And it's important to understand that in something like this, that the reason we have a show like this is to be able to explain to people about how lying and deception works and how it corrupts your life and how it influences you to do things or not do things that you probably wouldn't have done. I had made a comment to someone who sent me an email last week talking about a place called Dulce Base. And he said, tell me more about Dulce Base, Greg, because I don't really know this place. I said, well, you know, I know something about it. And I explained to him a little bit about what I was familiar with or what I was able to share with him. And he kept prodding me and saying, oh, tell me more, tell me more. I said, have you ever heard of a guy named Thomas Edwin Costello? He said, who? I don't know who that is. I said, of course you didn't, because he used to be a senior security officer at Dulce Base. And as a matter of fact, within 1 year after going public with the information about Dulce Base, he was dead. And we're going to talk about a couple other people that have ended up dead. My plan is to not end up dead. My plan is to be able to come every week and give information that helps you understand why these people ended up dead. Do you think it's any coincidence that as soon as Barnaby Jack hacked an insulin pump and was going to show information about the government that he ended up dead? How many people remember Vince Foster, a Clinton casualty back in the day? He was going to talk. He ended up dead. These things do happen. No government's perfect, but always keep your eye on the government. I'm glad that the founders were smart men and put a Second Amendment into the Constitution. I just really wish that everybody else would step up and be a man and be a woman and acknowledge that this is not the way the government's supposed to run. My state of Virginia is the one that should be telling me or giving me laws about guns or rifles or anti-tank missiles or whatever it's going to be. That's their purview. It's not the federal government's purview. So, moving along and staying alive, let's go to day two with Ted Kopp.
Before there's been any kind of definitive finding on how a tragedy occurred or why, pieces of information become available from 1,000 different sources. Some of that information will prove to be relevant. The perspectives of time and analysis will prove other fragments that seem important now to be totally irrelevant. That is both the strength and weakness of a free press. We sift the news as carefully as we can, understanding that some of what we report will be discarded as more information becomes available. But by disseminating what we know as quickly, accurately, and widely as we can, memories are jarred, connections are made, and eventually a clear picture emerges. It is the process that is important. Here then, as we come to the end of July 18th, 1996, is information that we believe to be relevant to the explosion yesterday of TWA's Flight 800 off the coast of Long Island. Hellenikon International Airport in Athens, Greece, has for many years had a reputation for extremely poor security. On March 21st of this year, U.S. Secretary of Transportation Federico Peña issues a public order which warns that Athens Airport needs to implement more effective security measures. The order requires that airlines issuing tickets for travel between the United States and Athens must notify passengers that security precautions at Hellenikon Airport do not meet international civil aviation standards.
Now just remember, these are pre-9/11 international airport security standards that he's talking about here. Back to the tape.
The political pressure begins immediately. The next day, March 22nd, a letter from Tennessee Congressman John Duncan Jr. goes to the Greek ambassador here in Washington. Congressman Duncan, who is chairman of the House Aviation Subcommittee, cites a conversation he had with Secretary Peña the night before. Quote, I told Secretary Peña, says the letter, that based on what I have been told, the Athens airport is one of the safest in the world. We asked Congressman Duncan why he sent the letter. His office said he has a large Greek constituency in his district. April 9th. The new Prime Minister of Greece, Kostas Tsimitis, makes his first official visit to Washington. He and President Clinton discuss, among many other things, security at Athens Airport. May 6th through 10th, a team from the Federal Aviation Agency visits Athens Airport and reassesses security. May 15th, Transportation Secretary Peña issues a new finding, quote, Hellenikon International Airport now maintains and carries out effective security measures.
So apparently it's our job to travel around the world and enforce civil aviation standards throughout the world. Just another police job for the United States of America.
Peña compliments Greek authorities. July 3rd. Mary Schiavo, the outgoing Inspector General of the Transportation Department, issues a confidential report on aviation security issues. The report is especially tough on airport security.
So the question is, whose airport security? Is it the Greek airport security, or is it ours this time? We may never know.
Which brings us, finally, to July 17th, yesterday morning, 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time. A TWA 747 leaves Athens Hellenikon International Airport for New York. While the 747 is still en route to New York, a fax is received in the London and Washington offices of an Arab language newspaper. The fax, written in Arabic, arrives yesterday at noon, Eastern Time. The message makes reference to the recent bombing at Qobar in Saudi Arabia, specifying the Americans were the intended target. The fax ends with the following threat. The Mujahideen will respond harshly to the threats of the stupid American president. All will be shocked by the magnitude of the response. The determining of the place and time are in the hands of the Mujahideen. The invaders must get ready to leave, alive or dead. And their rendezvous will be morning. And isn't morning near?
This particular document had no indication where it came from whom it came. It was on a blank piece of paper. So I think it was probably regarded as, you know, a hoax, one of those kooky things that comes across all of our desks from time to time.
Late in the afternoon, after an uneventful flight from Athens, the TWA 747 lands at JFK Airport in New York. At 8:20, the same plane, now designated TWA Flight 800, takes off from runway 22 right, destined for Paris, with 230 aboard. At 8:25, seeing nothing unusual, flight controllers clear it to climb to 13,700 feet.
Now make a note of that. It was approved to climb to 13,700 feet. That's going to be exceedingly important when we get to the next segment and we have a discussion on fuel. 13,700 feet. That's where they were approved to fly to. If you want to pull out a high school chemistry book, we're going to be talking a little bit about Charles' laws of gases. So get that thing ready. To truly understand the data, we have to look at the properties and attitudes and attributes of gases at 13,700 feet. That's the reason we're going to dig into this, because the answer is in the data.
At 8:31, all radar contact is lost.
I heard a loud explosion, a noise first, and then a fireball appeared in the sky about 7,000 feet up, bright orange and red flame, and then it just dropped out of the sky, a huge fireball.
Looked like a flare, and then it just... I watched it for a couple of seconds, and all of a sudden it just like split into two big balls of flame. And you can see the one big ball of flame was like just rotating down, like in the old movies where an airplane rotates down with one wing down, you know?
And I turned around, looked at the flare, and I'm like, wow, somebody must have some trouble in the bay. And no sooner I said that, the thing just like exploded, and it looked like a Christmas tree of fire going down to the water.
So let's start a comparative analysis now. Radar was lost at 8:31 p.m. on July 17th. Ted Koppel said that at 8:40 p.m., there was already a P3 in the air dropping life rafts. Question, how long did it take for any aircraft to get scrambled and in the air during 9/11? Let's answer that right now. At 8:32, Herndon called the FAA headquarters in Washington. At 8:34, Boston Center contacted Otis Air National Guard Base and notified them of the hijacking. The controller at Otis directed Boston to contact NORAD's Northeast Air Defense Sector and then informed the Otis Operations Center to expect a call from them, ordering a scramble. At this time, two pilots began to suit up and drove to their waiting F-15 fighter jets. At 8:38, Boston Center contacted NEADS in Rome, New York. This was the first report of a hijacking that reached NORAD. The two F-15 alert aircraft at Otis Air Force Base were ordered to battle stations, seated in their aircraft, engines not started, at 8:46. By 8:53, it was confirmed that they were airborne. It took from 8:32 to 8:53, a total of 21 minutes, to get F-15s up in the air. But for some reason, there was an Orion P-3 just happened to be there on site with life rafts that they don't usually carry. But wait, there's more. This is definitely worth the price of admission. You're going to love what comes up next.
By late evening yesterday, relatives of the passengers are escorted into so-called crisis rooms at JFK. There are doctors and psychologists on hand. Search and rescue has been underway since shortly after the crash and through the night. The FBI is brought into the investigation.
Aviation accidents are the purview of the National Transportation Safety Board unless a crime has been uncovered. Nothing's been uncovered yet. So why did the FBI show up?
Bodies are recovered all night long. By daybreak, there is no longer much hope of finding any survivors. A father and son spent the night searching for bodies.
We went through the fire. They were still burning. We went through the fire with the boat.
We did end up pulling three bodies out of the water and handing them over to the Coast Guard out there.
Two bodies that we found, there were two, one was a young girl who was saying in her 20s, and still strapped in the seat.
At Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, relatives who had planned to meet TWA Flight 800 are, as Jim Bitterman reports, also being gathered for counsel.
The family and friends were forced to suspend those throughout most of the day, 8.5 hours. While they hoped against all reality that there might be some kind of miracle. But when the lists of names came out this afternoon, it was clear there were no miracles.
Beginning at 9 this morning, senior officials of the Clinton administration and TWA share what little they can.
The appropriate federal and state local investigations are underway with dispatch and determination. I think you'll understand, I know you'll understand that I can't comment at this point. Beyond that, it would simply not be responsible for me to speculate at this time on causes and reasons for this terrible tragedy.
Is there any indication of criminal cause of this crash?
We don't have any indication at this point.
Senior Clinton officials just said there's no indication of a crime, but yet the FBI is already on the ground. Can you see where we're going with this? This is not appropriate. This is not proper protocol. These things don't happen. Protocol is just not thrown to the wind.
Except that we will pursue with all the other agencies everything necessary to get to the bottom of it.
We have no reason to believe that there was a threat against the air.
At 10:15 this morning, ABC News places a call to London to a contact with an Arab language newspaper there, and learns of the threatening facts that the newspaper received yesterday, well before the TWA crash. ABC News gives a copy of the facts to U.S. government officials for evaluation. It is the first they've heard of it.
I'd like to say a few words about the crash last night.
11:15.
We do not know what caused this tragedy. I want to say that again. We do not know, as of this moment, what caused this tragedy. We are beginning the painstaking process of piecing together what happened.
Unofficially, U.S. government sources are willing to commit themselves a little more than in public, but not much. They are, for example, still investigating the possibility that the Arabic fax to the London newspaper may be connected to the explosion of TWA Flight 800. It adds up to this. A lot of officials were talking in public today, but they weren't saying much.
We've gone way over for this segment, so We're going to cut it off here, and we'll come back after the break, and we'll continue. This is Greg Carpenter, Reverse Deception Radio, on the Veritas Radio Network Crusade Channel.
Reverse Deception. We'll be right back on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.